Look into my eyes, we're a wolfy pair of guys. Wolf, I lie to you, baby. Wolf, I lie to you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because I am Toddly T, Todd Jordan on the microphone here with the Bitter End Podcast, joined by my good buddy,
Tom Denny.
And we are at the Bitter End, man.
Whoop, whoop.
High five. We did it. This is the final film in the Howling franchise. We are here to watch The Howling Reborn. We got the back.
Oh, finally.
No more of this Howling 2, Howling 3 shit. The Howling.
And we've got another re.
Another re, another birthing thing. Good God, I am so excited to see this franchise be reborn from the literal ashes of the last movie that we tried to watch. A movie so bad, good listeners, that since we watched it, my companion Tom Denny has been virtually unable to walk.
Yeah, yeah. Like the day after we watched this film, I hurt my back so bad I was unable to walk for 2 days and had to be shot full of that very Moorish morphine to try and get myself back on my feet. Now, I don't think I can blame Clive Turner entirely for this, but he is definitely implicated in some way.
Yeah.
I think that my very inner being was shattered so hard from watching that film that I didn't care what I did with my body, and thus I nearly broke it.
You need one of those injury lawyers for you guys.
Oh,
to
yeah.
Get them to sue Clive Turner and be like, I watched this film, and then ever since I've been hobbling around on my two hind legs like a werewolf that's barely just learned to walk, all hunched over.
Yeah. I wonder how much money Clive Turner has now.
I wouldn't like to speculate.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, that last one must have been a tax write-off or something. But we're getting off track. So basically, they burnt the franchise to the ground with Howling 7. But now we're back in the noughties.
2011. I know. This is from the time that we're recording this now in August 2016, a mere 5 years ago.
And I got to say, from looking at the trailer, it's a very different kettle of fish. And when we were watching it, so one word sprung to mind when I saw this.
Okay.
And that word was twilight.
Oh my God, the shadow of twilight hangs so heavy over this trailer.
It's a totally tween,
like, it's very tweeny, film. But it wasn't coming in too hot on the romance element. I think it was kind
was
of trying
of
to... A little bit. There was a shit acoustic cover version of Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult, which is just like... I love that song. That song is rocking, man. But like to do that is just a really wimpy, breathy acoustic cover of Romeo and Juliet together in eternity. No one needs to hear that, especially not as the entirety of a trailer. But there was this very like noticeable line where one of the like it's like set in a high school apparently.
Yeah, you're getting the high school thing. Like finally
getting there. I must have read something about it and just filed it away in my brain without knowing. There's this line from like this sassy like teenage boy in high school who goes, hey man, these aren't your pussy ass makeup wearing vampires. These are werewolves. They're hardcore.
Yeah, I like that. That's
so
good.
I feel like they're trying to be like, hey, all you guys that are like, oh, I don't get this Twilight thing that my girlfriend's really into. My 16-year-old girlfriend is really into this Twilight thing. I don't get it. This is for those guys. This is just werewolves punching each other.
Just totally like bro down in the car park, just like having a fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to that. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't, from the trailer, I mean, it doesn't look good. But what I will say is that, like, it's something different. There's quite a lot of different in this. It looks like it's definitely in a city for once.
Yes!
After, like, teasing us with cities and then it not being in a city, it's got your classic sort of, like, sexy teen kind of horror vibe, which after just like a bunch of like, you know, like middle-aged cowboys in the desert of the last film, I mean, it's different. That'll be nice. So it's got more of a classic horror vibe. What else has it got going for? I don't know. It's just I think there's a reluctant wolfman kind of element in it.
So I want to talk about the lead, actually, this potentially reluctant wolfman. For a start, I don't know what year the first Harry Potter film came out, but this guy to me feels like someone in a studio went, we need Daniel Radcliffe, but yes, we can't afford him.
Totally. That's exactly
this guy
what
looks exactly like Daniel Radcliffe when he was about 22.
Yeah, cheap maybe. Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah. And the actor in question is actually, I don't have his name in front of me right now, but he is the same actor that would later on, in more recent times, go on to play a werewolf in Eli Roth's Hemlock Grove TV series. So got typecast at an early age.
Yeah, he really did. Shame for him, because they don't make loads of werewolf films these days. Yeah, so like, yeah, it just seems like there's a lot different going on for it to be a Howling film. I wonder if it will keep any of the Howling rules. It looks like there's still definitely like a wolf pack or cult, you know, like that you've had in these. Again, like what I've been saying, could be a bit Lost Boys-y as well.
Yeah.
Maybe
this absolutely.
Is what we, maybe we, you know, when we're there, like wishing what a film that has already been made years ago is going to be like, it's actually going to happen.
You never know, man. So it's quite interesting to talk about the gap that we had. Howling 7: New Moon Rising, that was 1995.
Yeah.
This is 2011, so that's a really big gap. What is that, 16 years? So someone obviously sat around and went, what can we pull out of the cupboard? Like, he's got this Rolodex of all the different franchises to reboot, and like this one had been rotated around to be like, oh, we haven't done one of these in a while. Ping.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's made maybe like a different production company or something, so it could be a case that that the rights to the Howling just like came up, another company took it, and they're like, we've got this werewolf script, we'll call it Howling, and then if there's God knows if there's going to be any Howling fans left out there after the, you know, what happened in 7. But maybe they'll be interested in watching this.
Yeah. And you know what? I am interested in watching this. This is, you know, it's only the third time you and I have ever reached the bitter end together. It's a special moment for me.
Yeah. And hopefully we'll be going out on a bit more of a high than we have on some of the previous franchises.
So let's take a look at that IMDb score, Tom, before we dive in.
It's going up. I'm telling you that.
You seem very confident.
Oh, yeah.
So just a reminder that the score of the last film was a whopping 1.8, which I would call generous.
Fuck me. Yeah, they don't go into minuses, do they, on IMDb? Let's say 4.
4.1.
Damn it, I'm getting so close.
I feel like you're getting really tapped into the IMDb like tastes.
Yeah.
you're slowly getting there. Season 4, you're going to get everyone right.
Cool. Well, looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going up. It's a shame that this movie isn't set in space, because every franchise we've done so far seems to have at least one film that's partly set in space.
Yeah, well,
maybe it'll happen.
Maybe. Yeah, we don't know. There's only one way to find out.
Let's go get Reborn. Catch you later, gang. Don't know why I said that.
I really wanted to come back with some kind of like tween-related gag, but I don't know what tweens do. But it was a really tween film.
It was totally tween. It was like, If Snapchat had existed in 2011, the whole film would have just been a Snapchat that got sent to you.
Oh, dude, there is a bit in this film that we will get to that is the Snapchatty bit of the film. But it was all right.
First impressions, definitely not the worst by like any stretch. Definitely not bad. Not the best, but I think it only fell down through the sheer fault of having been made in 2011.
But it was made in 2011 and looks like it was made in 2005 or something.
Seriously.
Like, it looks dated for a film that was only made 5 years ago. Like, it doesn't look...
The closest cinematic reference point I have for it is The Faculty with Elijah Wood.
I think The Faculty looks better than this.
Yeah, The Faculty does look more modern.
And is a better film, I would say.
Could have done with a couple of werewolves, but yeah, it's not too bad.
But yeah, like they were definitely gunning for some of that Twilight money. You can see why they tried to reinvigorate the franchise.
Yeah. So They're trying to definitely sell this like aspirational idea of like being an American high school student. They're in the center of Manhattan. They're going to high school in the fucking center of fucking Manhattan. This film is The Howling Takes Manhattan.
Yeah, but no one gets their head punched off. Actually, there is a decapitation in it, but you don't see it.
Oh yeah, you just see them.
Anyway. So it's a mixed bag. I think, as you can say, pretty much all the Howling films have been, apart from the first one.
And we can now, for the first time, say that confidently that we've seen every Howling film.
We damn well have.
How's that feel, buddy?
I feel great. I don't feel like I've wasted my time at all. I feel that was all, it was character building. I feel I'm stronger now. I think I know things that other people don't know. I don't think those other people need to know the things that I know, but I know them. So go fuck yourself, other people.
We are part of an exclusive club that includes you, me, maybe Clive Turner.
Let's dive into this film.
All right, what happened?
The film, fucking, like, in the opening credits, it says, based on the book, Howling 2.
Oh, no, you didn't!
Stop saying that! Stop telling me that and not meaning it!
So much must happen in that fucking book, man. There's so many completely unrelated films.
I'm sure it is not set in Manhattan. But basically, the film opens up, like, opening credits, you've got this pregnant artist called Catherine, and she's leaving answer phone messages or something like that to her husband. She's talking about her art show that's coming up, and she feels that she's being followed. And then she's in her studio and she paints a big picture of a circle, and then you get these kind of like wolf's eye views, and basically she gets got by a wolf. She's like, is someone there? And well, we assume it's a wolf. You don't see the wolf. And you hear this kind of like villainous Eddie the Mangler-esque voice saying something. He's like, I want what's inside you.
Yeah. Are you ready for the next stage of evolution? He says something like that.
So, and basically this werewolf like traps her under like a bit of rigging from like the ceiling or some
ceiling rigging.
Yep. She's an artist. Ceiling rigging. And like fucking like cuts open her pregnant belly, and like this is like the beginning of the film, like whoa, what's going on here? And then you see like a little like a hand or something like come out of the,
I wrote down that it was a penis tongue, but thinking about it now, a baby's hand probably does make a lot more sense.
But basically what it boils down to is like werewolf attacks pregnant woman to get to her and the child, and the building blows up, and then we cut to like high school.
Before you go into the high school bit, can we talk about that explosion for a second? Mm. Because that explosion was triggered by literally nothing.
Yeah.
No shot in it at all to explain the explosion.
That is true.
It just explodes. And it explodes in CGI.
Oh, yeah, the CGI explosion is bad.
And in 2011, like, it shouldn't be that bad.
This film didn't have the budget to, like, destroy a building. Definitely not. Although that explosion maybe makes a bit more...
It's in the trailer. They put that explosion in the trailer. They're proud of it.
They put everything in the trailer, though. But basically, then we cut to this high school, and we've got Will, who is this kid that looks like Harry Potter, basically.
He's meant to be... It's the day before his 18th birthday.
And it's the day before graduation.
Yeah, he's played by Landon Le Boiron, who is the guy from Hemlock Grove.
Yeah, and he's one of those, you know, like in like high school films where like you're this kind of like witty and incredibly attractive person, but for some reason everybody hates you and you're really socially awkward. He's that guy.
That guy.
And he's walking around talking to his mate...
Sashin,
yes.
Who is a tedious hacker who also writes and directs horror films.
Yep, he's just like your generic kooky mate. And they're talking about finishing up school. And then we see this girl, Eliana, who Will has fancied like the whole time he's been in high school. And she's like got that kind of like resting bitch face kind of look. She's kind of like, I'm sassy, don't fuck with me kind of vibe. And she's got this really angry French boyfriend.
Oh, God, he's the worst.
They both look just really angry. And then you also get the slow motion leather jacket bros.
They always move in slow motion.
There's like these three big beefy bros who've all got like red leather jackets, and they just like walk around in slow motion, and they're all just hanging out being a total dick to Will. Sashin's like, I'm gonna go because you're obviously gonna get your ass handed to you. Angry French boyfriend comes up and like, it's like, you looking at my girl? Are you looking at my girl? And like cuts his neck for some reason with a ring. He's got like a ring on his finger.
He cuts
like
our hero's neck. Will, yeah.
He cuts Will's neck with this ring. Now, this is the bit where you're kind of like, already like early on in the film, you just might be like, well, someone's gotten cut. I'm guessing maybe werewolves? Like scratches? Curse? I don't know. They throw that out there definitely to make you think that, you know, they're a pack of baddies and like that he is a wolf and like maybe he's like turning him or something like that.
None of that. It's a total red herring.
There's a lot of red herrings in this film.
It's also around this point that as we were watching the film, Tom turned to me on the sofa and said, which one is this again? which film is this? And I was like, oh, it's The Howling Reborn. And he was like, oh, yeah.
I don't know. just because. I don't fucking like. At this point, it's just like, yeah, they're all just kind of blurring into one.
They kind of are.
Big wolfy mess. But like, there's this weird chemistry between Will and Eliana.
Yeah.
Like, she, like, comes over to him and is kind of... She obviously knows that he fancies her and she's using that against him and, like, grabs his sketchbook that he's got and, like, obviously every page in his sketchbook is a picture of her that makes him look like some insane serial killer. And she's like, that's really cool. Doesn't she, like, sign one of the pages in his blood?
Yeah, she takes the blood off his neck, signs it, his drawing with her signature in his blood, then takes it and is like, the world is divided into people who take what they want and people who get taken. She's like, I'm taking this because I want it. And then like puts it in a pocket and walks off all sexily.
So then you're kind of like, werewolf? I assume that
probably
she is
a werewolf. Now I've got kind of a problem with this bit a little bit. I'm going to lay some heavy shit on you.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we talked about this a bit while we were watching it, but like, obviously, you know, I like horror films a lot, but a lot of them aren't, they're not necessarily known for being the most, like, socially awake medium.
Yeah.
You know, and they tend to put the female characters especially into either the Scream Queen or this kind of enigmatic, unknowable other, which happens a lot, which is every single female character in this film, where all they do is they come up to the hero, they say these, they talk in cryptic riddles, and then they look all wry, and then they just walk off. And that is like a placeholder for them having an actual character or things to do. All they do is they just like deliver clues and then like wander off.
I mean,
and I hate it.
Yeah.
That is so shit.
Yeah, totally. But do you think this is because it's being like that some of these films are being written by like, you know, like
people that have never met a woman?
Yes, I do.
Pasty
guys that have never met women and just assume that like they're all kind of like these like unknowable puzzle boxes.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So basically, if she'd stayed this kind of mysterious, unknowable, cryptic, locked box like throughout the whole film, that'd be fucking shit. Mm. But like, that would be par for the course. The thing that stands out in this is that for no plot point, for no reason, like at a certain point, she stops being like this wry, knowing, worldly, that would be telling kind of character, and starts just being, oh, well, actually right now I could do with you either saving me from this werewolf or banging me on the school desk.
Yeah,
could you do one of those two things?
Yeah, she becomes like girl next door. Then she's like, kind of like, bang me. And then she goes back to being like this really aggressive, I take what I want, kind of like going back to that kind of like unknowable person. And then, I don't know, like her character is all over the place. And none of them are actually a character. It's like, who is this person?
Yeah. So I bring it up not just because of her specifically, but because that is what all of the female characters in this film are.
Yes, yeah.
So I just
and
wanted to
raise...
there's
not a lot of female characters. There's two.
That is a good point. There, actually, there are two.
There's only two.
Oh my God, you're right.
Okay, well, we should quickly move on
Let's move on from this.
We've got ground to cover with this.
Guess what? All the characters use Bing. That's their favourite search engine.
That's another thing. When you spot that in a film, you're like, bullshit. I'm calling bullshit on that. We should get back to the plot.
I don't know, man. Let's talk about Bing a bit
more. We've been like deconstructing the roles of women in horror films and talking about how shit Bing is. Basically, Will gets invited to this like underground grad party by Eliana. She gives him this flyer, like printed out in like the shittest fonts ever. It's awesome. And like the party is in the abandoned swimming pool underneath the high school. And an important thing to say about this high school, this is like a prison of a high school. Like, it's got like futuristic lockdown, I think because it's in the middle of New York.
Like, it's in the center of Manhattan. It looks like a fucking castle.
It looks like a castle. And basically at a certain point every night, the whole school shuts down with like massive, like bomb-proof, like shutters. Like, no one can get in or out. Like, it then becomes like a prison. Some reason the kids can get underneath the school into the abandoned swimming pool and have like some like really shit like party where everyone's like dancing to like really woozy trip hop, and the bullies, like the slow motion leather jacket bros, give Will like a pill, and he has a bit of a trip and dance, and they're like, we're giving you Eliana, and like he dances with her, and like they talk a load of bullshit. Everybody in this film, right, talks in like animalistic references.
Dude, did you keep track of any of them?
No.
Because there were some really good ones.
It's one of those things, like, you know, like, there's this thing where, like, he'd be like, oh, I'm just trying to avoid the predators at high school, you know, or like, someone goes like, oh, you'll eat outside of high school, you'd eat those guys for breakfast. And like, they were like running with the pack.
Yeah.
And like, everything is very...
survival of the fittest.
Yeah, there's lots of animalistic imagery. And it's like, if they just like peppered it in, it would be fine, but it shows up all the time where they're like talking about everything, like, oh man, don't make me bare my teeth to you or some shit like that. And this is like the conversation that that Will and Eliana have at the trip hop dance in this empty swimming pool. And then he has a bit of a mongy wrongin on his pill, and then he thinks he sees a load of werewolves, and he like runs off because all the werewolves are there, and then he kind of just like, he gets chased by a werewolf,
which we don't see. It's your classic like fake out POV werewolf.
And so then he like the very next day goes to his mate and just says like, "So what can you tell me about werewolves? I think I might be a werewolf."
And obviously Sashin knows everything about werewolves
because
he writes horror films. Damn it! So he's like, "Okay, I can tell you a bunch of things for a fact."
Sashin's like, "Hey, buddy, let me take you to Rules Corner."
Thanks for doing that, Sashin. Mighty fine of you.
Yeah, so basically he lays down, like, reestablishes that it's fire and silver are the things that are going to kill werewolves. Doesn't talk about full moons, but in this film, full moons don't really mean anything. Wolves can just kind of wolf out whenever they want. The new rule... or rules is that if you get turned into a werewolf and then you kill a human, that is like the no turning back point.
Yeah, it seems to suggest that you turn into a werewolf if you've been attacked by one and survived. So you are a werewolf at that point. There's a suggestion that you could maybe be cured one day if you haven't killed a human.
Or you don't lose your humanity.
Yeah, and once you've killed a humanity, there's no going back. I feel like this is a rule that they're trying to set up for sequel.
Yeah,
which
ain't gonna happen.
As yet, has not happened.
But. And then the only other rule is that the leader of that, there is an actual pack leader, which has never been. I mean, there are obviously people that you can see are the leader of the wolf pack,
like Sturba, Werewolf Bitch.
Yeah, in other films. But the new rule is that they cannot be killed by a human. They can only be killed by another wolf. And that never happens because the other wolves would get their asses handed to them.
So this leader's called an alpha.
Mm, yeah, yeah. And then that's kind of it. But during this scene where, like, we're laying down all this wolf exposition, we get the dig in the ribs about, like, Twilight and sparkly vampires. We also get this bit where he says to Will, like, oh, what, have you never seen a werewolf flick? And he's just like, oh, like, I guess if they shouldn't cast, like, middle-aged people or something in their... What does he say?
The line is, if I want to see some geezers in their 40s, I'll go home and look at my parents.
Which has got to be a very unthinly veiled dig at Howling Seven and Clive. That's what I got.
Or pretty much any of the Howling films, to be honest. I mean, Christopher Lee was no spring chicken, Tom.
Christopher Lee was no spring chicken, but, like, the other characters were played by young, pretty actors.
Some of them.
Well.
Some of them in The Howling 3.
But this is, like, the last film was the most old geezery film.
Yeah.
Of all of them.
Yeah, no, I think you're
just let me
right.
have this. Let me just have this this dig.
I'm going to let you have that.
That Clive Turner got, like, got shown up in this film that everybody totally saw. So yeah, like, he's like, this is one of those things, like, in the film that's a bit different from the other films. Like, people sometimes jump to werewolves quite quickly in Howling films, but in this, he's just like, werewolves. I definitely saw werewolves when I was on my, like, you know, like when I was, like, taking drugs in an underground basement party. I definitely think there are werewolves. I definitely think I am one. And, like, does he go to the nurse's office? Oh, because he's feeling a bit peaky or something like that. And Sashin basically, like, comes in. It's like, hey, what's up, bruh? And he's like, kind of like, I think I'm a werewolf. What should I do? And he's like, well, if you're a werewolf, cut your wrist with this scalpel. You won't die because it's not silver. And then he's like, okay, I will. And then Sashin goes, oh, wait, bro, don't do that. Don't. No, you'll actually die because he obviously doesn't believe in werewolves. And then he's like, kind of like, what do I tell the authorities when they show up and find me standing here with your dead body? Oh, wait a minute. And then he gets his phone out and starts filming it.
Because that'll explain it away.
Yeah.
Honestly, the mobile phone shit in this film is unbelievable. Everyone has the exact same mobile, which is this weird ass, like, one that you hold sideways, where one of those old ones they had where the screen slides backwards to reveal a full thumb keyboard.
Mm.
And there's this really long scene where Will is in the classroom with his phone, with his headphones in, and he's listening to the absolute worst song in the world. That goes a little something like this. When he drives out left, walks hands, one smooth, almost feminine, almost American. I have to watch it. Oh, that is it. In his face, a sense of youth. Oh, that is relentless.
It's not good. He caught me looking in, and soon his eyes
got wet. And everything. Oh, no, just stop. Could you actually just stop? Meanwhile, his kind of erstwhile one-dimensional character of a girlfriend is a few desks over, and she's like text messaging him going, hey, what are you listening to? And he texts back going, hey, I'll send it to you. And he uses the amazing Bluetooth technology on this 5-year-old mobile phone to, like, stream the track to her as well so that she can hear it too. And for the length of this song, they just sit there on their, like, bullshit identical smartphones, like,
just listening, texting each other.
Just texting each other and listening to this song. No plot advancement.
No dialogue.
No dialogue other than to show off what this phone can do.
And how awful this song is.
Yeah.
And this is the point where she starts to change. So, like, her character at the underground pool party is still, like, super dark and cryptic. And then this is the bit where she's just kind of like, she texts him and is like, last night, WTF, crazy, huh? And starts becoming, like, girl next door. And he's going through this thing of, like, thinking that he's becoming a werewolf, and he has a bit where he gets into a fight with her French boyfriend, and the French boyfriend is like, I'm going to kill you. No one's going to save you now because I am just, like, a generic bully with nothing to live for. And then, like, he kind of, like, hulks out on him because he's like, the beast is awakening inside him. Cause, like, oh, we obviously are thinking, like, well, he's going to be a werewolf at some point. And he kicks the shit out of the bully, like, twats him against a toilet bowl, walks off. The bully gets up, pulls out a gun, and is like, kind of like, this doesn't seem like out of the ordinary. I'm just going to go and shoot this guy. And then he gets killed by a wolf. We don't see who the wolf is, but we are definitely led to believe that it's Eliana.
Crucially as well for me, the wolf doesn't actually like kill him with wolfiness. There's no claws or teeth or biting. What the wolf does is pick him up and throw him down the stairs.
Oh yeah, and he falls down like several flights of stairs and bangs off of a wall.
Yeah. So
it's a bit weak.
It's a bit weak, isn't it? If you're gonna wolf out on someone, fucking bite their nose off or something.
Yeah.
Have a little nose nibble.
So basically a lot of stuff unravels with Will like feeling more like a beast, feeling like that like something is wrong, feeling like he might be a werewolf. The leather jacket bros come up and kind of like harass him, and you get the impression that they're obviously werewolves as well. Now, what is also happening in tandem with this is Will meets this mystery woman called Kay.
She's a bit of a locked box. She says a lot of enigmatic, unknowable things.
Yeah, she just comes up to him and just starts talking to him randomly. He's like, you'll eat those guys alive outside, you know, like in the real world and all this kind of shit. And then she meets up with Will's dad when Will's in the nurse's office and basically seduces Will's dad. They go on a date. They go back to Will's dad's apartment. They have this really awkward conversation about boning down. They go to bone down, and then it turns out that she is Will's and this guy's former dead wife. It's the dead mum. It's the dead wife. He's just kind of like, she's got different coloured hair.
She's not dead. She just got turned into a fucking werewolf.
Like, he's been pining over his dead wife for 18 years and didn't realise that he was on a date with her.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. The only thing that's different is her hair.
Yeah. She's like, don't you recognise me? And he was like, whoa. And then it becomes apparent that she is a werewolf. She gets her big fangs out.
She's coming back to claim her son back. She wants him in her pack.
Yes, yes. At this very same time, in tandem, there is a really dodgy scene between Eliana and Will where they nearly fuck in the middle of the library.
It's so weird. So he's in the library. He's got this big book on lycanthropy. It's like the encyclopedia of werewolves. He's pulled off the shelf. Interestingly, the name of the author on the cover of the book is the same name as the guy that wrote and directed this film.
Because he needs to get his name on the film in some way.
Oh, of course.
It wouldn't be in the opening credits.
Well, do you know what? It's in the opening credits twice. I made a little note of this as well. It says, written by this dude's name. Directed by this dude's name. I was like, nah, you could have had one credit that just said written and directed by. But no, you wanted your name twice there, pal, didn't you? So he's reading this book. Eliana comes up to him and is like, hey, what's going on with you? Why are you reading about werewolves? And he's like, oh, because I reckon I probably am one. And she's like, okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to tie you up here in the library with like this flimsy little red ribbon I happen to have in my pocket. Ties him up and she's like, right, did you make the right choice? If you're a werewolf, then I've saved lives. If I'm a werewolf, you're about to die. And then they have a bit of a weird, awkward clothes-on semi-bone.
Yeah.
Where they kind of just like...
It's a bit of a reach around.
Kind of just rub up against each other. And then she's like, ah, well, I'm going to go now.
And this is where she changes, like, from being... This is the bit where you think, okay, she's definitely a werewolf. And then it goes like, oh, no, the mum is the werewolf. And then she suddenly goes like, oh, I'm really sweet now. And, like, her character completely changes. And they have all these, like, really, like, heartfelt, vulnerable conversations rather than her being, you know, the puzzle woman.
Yeah.
She's suddenly like, oh, but she's like the, you know, like the guy who's writing it. It's like the girl I always wanted her to be, like, you know, the mystery woman who then turns out to be really vulnerable and only I can complete her.
God, honestly, the teenage pain of the guy writing the screenplay on this is just soaking through it.
Yeah. And then basically what happens is like the mum shows up with the leather jacket bros. And confronts Will that, like, I'm a werewolf, you're a werewolf, we're going to kill her, you're going to join my pack. Will and Eliana escape.
Before that, there's this very brief moment where Will decides to join the pack. So there's this bit where Eliana's like, no, I don't think I can face this intense relationship. And she runs off.
Mm.
And then comes back, like, right in the middle when he's joining the pack. And she's like, I've decided I can't live without you. Even though she's only known him for literally like a day.
Yeah.
And he says these exact words, I thought about it and I could definitely live without you. Bye.
burn.
And then he throws her out the window.
But he throws out the window knowing that he won't die because he's a werewolf, and like that jumping out of a window won't kill him. So he jumps out and grabs her, and he takes the brunt of the fall.
Yeah, and then we get this kind of almost cool bit where like his bones break, but then like rejoin together.
So then basically trying to like pedal things forward to the end. The school goes into lockdown because the werewolf leather jacket bros have like decided that for their evil plan, they're going to like lock the robo school down and seal everybody in, sealing Will and Eliana in. While outside, the graduation is going on, and the graduation doesn't take place until at least like 10 o'clock in the evening.
So it happens
like,
at night in the rain.
Yeah, everyone's been locked out of the school, which gives us plenty of time to have like a bit of cat and mouse between like the werewolves and Will and Eliana. We get the really uncomfortable scene with Will and Eliana when she's like, yeah, bone me, just do it. Yeah, like her character flitting around. It's horrible.
She's covered in blood. Yeah. They're like, take a moment to like hide themselves in this classroom. And she's like, here's what we're doing. Now's the time. On this desk.
Yeah.
Get it done, son.
Will builds some makeshift flamethrowers in the space of 2 minutes because he's like, I hope that science class wasn't a complete waste of time. It wasn't. I can build flamethrowers. And they go down into the like the catacombs of the school to that empty
school
swimming,
has catacombs.
To the swimming pool where the party was, and it's full of dead bodies. This bit looks kind of cool because they're like lighting the way with like flamethrowers, and it's a little bit Aliens-y.
It's like that James Cameron film Aliens. Yeah, it's like they're walking around in the dark with flamethrowers, and there's like dead bodies hung up, and they're going into the nest, basically.
Yeah. And they go down there, and basically, Will's mum has the dad strung up, kills him,
breaks his neck,
and is like, basically reveals like all these dead bodies that they got down there, they're not dead. Basically, cause it's like if you don't get killed by a werewolf, then you get turned. And they basically have got like loads and loads and loads and loads of these kids and have like wounded them so that they will turn. And they're saying like, come the blue moon, which is happening tonight, we will have an army.
Cool. So this bit,
I'm
starting to get into it a bit more at this point. You know, this idea of like this never-ending stream of werewolves that's kind of coming out.
Yeah.
Which means there's probably a good time for us to dip our toe into Wolves Corner.
Wolves Corner. Oh,
so the werewolves in this, they look good.
Some of them look better than others. You don't see a lot of werewolves for the bulk of the film, like
more than we have done in recent films.
An hour in, we were kind of like, still haven't really seen a wolf.
What I will say is that I like the design of them,
but
I don't think they've done a very good job on executing that design with the effects.
There's like two, the wolves all look like they have like really like big thighs or like flares on made out of fur. They have like really funny legs.
Yeah, they look like the werewolves from the first Howling film, but just wearing MC Hammer trousers.
Yes. Well, some of them do. So like when Will and Kay, the mum, and also Eliana, because she turns into a wolf, they have like, they look like the wolves from the first film with the big long snout and the ears. But then there's the lackeys, like the leather jacket bros, look, they're like hairless. They look a little bit more like bat people.
Yeah, they don't look a million miles away from Kel Harker,
yes,
vampire character from
The
Howling Six. The Freaks!
Yeah, and they probably look better than the actual wolfy wolves.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see some actual wolves for a change. Like, we've had a few films now where you don't really see any wolves or many wolves or wolves that look like wolves. The only thing that's a bit weak is that there aren't transformations.
No, you don't really see any transformations.
They just morph. They basically morph from normal to, like, they CGI it. And that just doesn't really have as much impact.
I tell you what, though, this film has taught me a genuinely valuable lesson,
mm-hmm,
which is that for this whole season, man, we have been going, oh, I want that urban werewolf movie. Where's that urban werewolf movie? This is that.
Mm.
Turns out, if you put a werewolf inside a building, it is nowhere near as scary as a werewolf in the middle of the forest. It just isn't, is it?
No.
It just isn't.
They're just in the hall, just having a fight in the hall.
It looks wrong. It looks wrong. It's got nothing to hide behind. You need to see it running between some trees, you know? That's yeah. like casting a long shadow. Even if it's night and the lights are off, if it's just standing in the hallway, doesn't look that good.
No, no, that's that is a fair point. I mean, well, we asked for it for long enough and then we got it.
I was wrong, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So basically, like, the mum is, like, going to, like, raise this wolf army and, like, the blue moon is going to be this thing where they're gonna take over the world. What is annoying is that, like, you never really find out what it is about the blue moon that's meant to actually... They're just like, what? Well, why? Just because.
Because it's a song.
Yeah, just because. Yes. And then there's this other thing that, like, there's this image of the circle as a sign of, like, the moon that comes up throughout the film. Like, the mum paints it, like, before she gets attacked by the wolf. The wolf that attacks her, who we never find out who that is,
never
by
see
the
him
way.
Ever, ever,
no
ever.
Idea. He has that tattooed on the back of his neck. Eliana has it tattooed on her arm.
Which makes no sense.
She does become a werewolf at the end because Will scratches her during a bit of a bone down. And that's it.
And she saves him. So the climax of the film is Will wolfs out. His mum wolfs out. She's the alpha. They're having a bit of wolf-on-wolf violence in a fight that's kind of cool. They both look like all right wolves, but the problem is that when they're fighting, we don't know who's who. We don't know which of these giant wolf people is the goodie and which one's the baddie because they kind of look the same. And then as the one that turns out to be the mum, the alpha, the evil one, is going to kill Will, the baddie gets her heart ripped out from behind her by Eliana, who is now also an identical wolf. And then Will is like, hey, yo, chill out. You don't need to be a wolf. Take control of yourself. Don't you remember me? Don't you remember me? We spent a good 4 hours together.
Yeah.
You We're must in love now. Me. We are in love
We've
now.
Got this doomed tragic love that's really intense.
And then she gets control of herself, turns back into a naked person, and then all is well with the world.
Well, all is not well with the world. Before the final showdown, they do a bit of a homage to the first film where Will records a video that is able to, of him transforming into a wolf and doing like what happened in the first one, like showing the world that werewolves exist. The reason, why is it that this happens?
It's because Sachin, before Sachin died, he was going to broadcast his homemade horror film.
To the world.
To the world.
He's a hacker.
He'd hacked into the global, you know, the global broadcast system. That. So his horror film was going to appear on every TV in the world at the same time. Because, you know, that'll get his film made and not him in prison, I guess.
Yeah,
so, but they still, even though Sachin's dead, he got decapitated, by the way, by the wolves earlier.
Yeah.
Sorry. We didn't see it happen. There's just a bit where...
they use his head as a sock puppet.
They suddenly have his head as a sock puppet. And
it's
they go,
pretty funny.
So it was while he's trying to do this broadcast, they go, use the sock puppet head. And they go, sorry, Will, the revolution will not be televised.
That was good. I like that bit. Yeah, so like you get that. And then... The mum's dead and they burn down the school to kill all the werewolves that are manifesting in the basement.
Meanwhile, all the students are outside in the rain in the middle of the night graduating. They see the building burn down. Nobody does anything other than stand and stare. And then Will and Eliana like walk out covered in blood, soaking wet. They walk past and they go, you people have no fucking idea. And then they just walk off. No one arrests them.
Yeah.
No one
tries
says,
to stop them.
No, nothing.
We cut.
And credits roll.
The credits roll. And then you get, like, during the credits, like, a few, like, little extra, like, scenes that pop up of people reacting to Will's video. And, like, some people don't believe it. Some people are amazed. And then you get these news reports that basically the werewolf apocalypse is happening because of this blue moon.
Like all around the world, we see like a map with all these little like werewolf flare-ups happening and it's all through Europe and...
Yeah, yeah. Like basically it suggests that the world is doomed from werewolves. The end. That's it.
I really feel like they were trying to set up for a sequel, like another Howling film that would follow directly on from this one.
Yeah, the only thing is that like that sequel that they are setting up would be like way out the budget, like because that's basically like World War Wolf.
Oh my God, I want to see World War Wolf so bad.
I know, but like they can't do it on that budget.
Oh,
it would
no.
all have to be set in a building and they wouldn't be able to blow up any buildings. They would all have to use like fucking what? Like gifts of explosions stuck over the top.
Why did you have to say World War Wolf? It's the only thing I can think of now.
Yeah. but that's it. That's the end of the Howling franchise.
Mate, end of the Howling franchise, high five. Fucking, we're done. We're at the bitter end.
Yeah, I think this one was, it was more of a film than some of the other films have been. It's difficult, I think, when you go through watching a franchise that started in the early 80s and then you get to like the one film that's been made in like the past 5 years.
Yeah.
And like there's like been like such a long gap that it really sticks out like a sore thumb.
If they'd done this script in the late 80s, it would have been amazing. Can you imagine this, but just without all of the like, without all of the shit emo acoustic guitar music that runs through it. If they'd have had like Talking Heads going all the way through it.
Dudes with boomboxes walking around turning into wolves and
yeah, that would have been gorgeous.
Like a proper horror version of Teen Wolf.
Yeah, exactly. Like scary Teen Wolf. Mm. It would have been amazing. So I feel like its only failings were of being
the era that it was
of being
made.
A 2011 film. Although even though it was made in 2011, like you said, it really feels a lot older than that. It feels like early noughties, just because of how like cheesy and lowest common denominator it is.
It still doesn't, I don't know, like it still doesn't really, it's a Howling film. It could easily not be a Howling film. But we'll probably talk about that a bit more in the next episode, because the next episode will be the Howling franchise wrap-up episode, where we will talk about this bad boy as a whole. And I think there's some things to be said about it. But, like, as far as this one goes, it's cool.
It's cool, bro.
It's cool. It's cool. It's, I mean, it's a difficult franchise because, like, oh, it just crashed and burned so early.
It's like a shattered mirror.
Yeah, that you're just, yeah, it's been a tricky one. It really has. But, I say we'll get into that next episode.
Before we do, Tom,
yeah,
there's one tiny little thing that we forgot to do.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do it super quick for you. You ready? Fastest one ever.
I want it.
Welcome to The Bitter End, Oscars for Enthusiasm, the Endy Awards. One of the bad, mean werewolves, when he's a human, he just stands around with his shirt off, looking all oily, looking directly at the camera and going, and he never stops. Congratulations, mate. You just won an Endy Award.
I love that guy. Like, he is like the most smolderiest bro. Like, he was obviously hired because he's not an actor. He's like a model turned actor. And, like, this is, like, the first gig he's gotten, and, like, he doesn't have any lines, and he just, like...
Don't need him.
He just takes his shirt off. Like, yeah, this is his bit with, like, where, like, Will's mum is stood there with all the leather jacket bros, and they've all taken their leather jackets off, and they're all just there, like, rippling away in their muscles. And it's just, like, it's so gratuitous. It's really funny.
Love it. Top-notch entertainment there, Tom. So, look, we're done, guys. We are done talking about The Howling Reborn. But we're not done with this franchise yet. Like we do every season, we're going to come back next week with a franchise wrap-up where we talk about all of the films as a whole, how they all connect together, what their impact on society and cinema as a whole has been, and all the other odd little bits and bobs, as well as revealing what we're going to be covering for season four. We've made our minds up. It may surprise you, it may not. So please do tune in next time and find out what that's going to be all about. Until then, feel free to tweet us at BitterEndPod or get in touch on Facebook at BitterEndPod. It's always great to hear from you. My name is Todd Jordan.
My name is Tom Denny.
And we will see you in a wolfy week.
Oh, woo.
Haven't done that for a while.